Hello, and welcome to another episode of Study of X, the bi-weekly X-Men podcast where we cover the Krakoan era of X-Men comics. With me, as always, is Chris.
I hope you're excited for the riveting conclusion of Empire X-Men, because I'm sure it will not be a bit of a disappointment. Not at all.
And Sergio.
Yeah, I cannot believe they turned it around. I'm so pleased with how this turns out.
Yeah, the fact that they threw in pirates and ninjas at the end, that was an interesting and inspired choice.
Yeah. Also, my name is Tim. I don't think I introduced myself. But yeah, we got three issues this week. We're wrapping up Empire X-Men before heading into more Empire stuff with the mainline X-Men book before going over to Wolverine for not Empire. We're done with Empire.
Yes, yeah. After X-Men, we are done. But could I say maybe X-Men 11 is better than the Empire X-Men tie-in? Because I'm going to say yes.
I would back you up on that one.
Yeah, so, yeah, we got some interesting stuff this week.
Yeah, let's just jump into it. So for Empire X-Men number 4, titled Unring, this one is back to being written just by Jonathan Hickman. We do not have anybody else with him this time. And this issue was released in August of 2020. And we're going to open up here back into the past, about a month ago, actually, as we see the Scarlet Witch wake up from the spell that she cast in Genosha to try to correct her failures. And we do see what she saw once she awoke, and that was a horrific legion of undead mutants.
Yeah.
We knew this already.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We knew the punchline, but nice to see it play out, because we do get the nice follow-up here, where she goes back to Doctor Strange and says, "Hey, I did what you said, I rung a bigger bell, but it made a bigger problem." And Strange just has to sigh and be like, "No, you did not listen to what I said at all. This is a huge problem."
Yeah.
Uh-huh. She did a fucky wucky.
Yeah.
Hey, just a little bit. Oopsie daisy.
Oopsie whoopsie. Yeah. Is this our... I don't know if we mentioned this last time. Is this our first time really seeing Doctor Strange?
He did show up in the previous episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But aside from that.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is the first.
Yeah, that's kind of neat. But yeah, I'm sure we don't really need an introduction for him. But yeah, he is a character.
I don't know about his suit. I am not a fan.
The vibes I usually
associate with the Doctor Strange.
It is a little different, yeah.
Yeah.
Looks a little like a spaceship crew vibes.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, to anyone who has not read the comic, it is a skin-tight black and white suit with like some bronze like arm gauntlets and the gold Eye of Agamotto, you know, right below his neck. It is a weird look, and I'm sure at this point Doctor Strange is probably in a weird spot. I want to say not long after this, Doctor Strange dies, and that's a whole event in the comics that just never gets touched on in X-Men, but he does die at some point. So,
it actually kind of does, but we'll talk about that, you know, later.
Does it? Wow.
It's in a very weird way, but we'll get to that. But yeah, I feel like you could best describe this like suit as like if Doctor Strange was a space knight that had a symbiote.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah, it's Venom vibes for some reason.
So the Scarlet Witch relates to Doctor Strange what she did in order to make the spell work. You know, all of the horrific pieces she used to make the staff as he's taking shots each time. He is not that happy about what she did. And says, yeah, you know, we should probably go and fix your mistake. So he cancels his dinner date with Wong. And the two of them travel through the multiverse to regather some items to make the antithesis of the staff that she created.
Yeah.
And shout outs to Doctor Strange for distracting the Asgardians by bringing them light beer instead of anything else.
Yeah, that was I like that joke.
That was a fun little gag.
Yeah. But yeah, so we show up at the barrier, we do the little spell to undo the thing, and nothing happens.
Yep, it's big, it's dramatic, there's a massive explosion, and Doctor Strange is like, alright, cool. Well, like I said, we can't unring the bell you just did, so instead I have placed a barrier around Genosha so none of the dead can leave, and your spell is now done, but it is going to take about 30 days for the effects to wear off.
Which, I mean, personally seems like unringing a bell, but hey, you know.
I guess it's a very slow quieting of the bell, but,
yeah,
you know. So, you know, as...
Not a huge fan of this, particularly.
It
kind of turns the whole issue into a joke, into the, like, the punch.
Yeah.
Of a joke.
Yeah, and...
Yeah, it's...
You know what's going to happen. You know how this ends already.
Yeah, like the next page you turn and there's a 29 days later thing on it, and it's like, oh, okay, the zombies are about to go away.
Mm-hmm.
What happened, Jonathan? Were you on you on a, like, tight schedule?
Yeah.
God, yeah. So these first pages, what they basically do is they undo any sense of stakes that were placed by the previous issues, which weren't great to begin with. But this is just turned into, kind of a punchline now.
Yeah, like we know what's happening here. It's all going to end when the clock strikes midnight or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
It's kind of what I was talking about, you know, last episode, where this really does just feel like the side diversion, you know, fluff event. It's not going to have a lot of bearing on anything. I do wish there was a little bit more here with Wanda, you know, resurrecting a bunch of mutants and turning them into zombies. But as we're going to see, it seems like nobody's going to know that she did this. And that's a little weird.
Yeah.
There is nothing here.
Yeah. At most, there's something maybe a few characters can reference in the future, but, like, that's it. So, but continuing on until we get there, we turn the page, and like Tim said, there is 29 days later in the corner as we see the giant mother brain-esque creature step out of its seed pod and begin to destroy everything.
Yeah, we get the various players of this conflict, we get a couple shots of everybody just looking shocked.
Mm-hmm.
People debate running. They say, no, we're going to fight this thing. Yeah, that's what we're doing. Oh, Beast stole some tech. Maybe there's some consequence.
That's true. There is a little bit here, and I do have to say thumbs up to this being, you know, an actual thing, because we've talked about how Beast is maybe very quickly sliding into CIA Black Ops kind of thing. And then when he was talking with Opal, we were like, oh, you know, maybe they did bring back his nice grandpa, you know, persona. No, he was still lying most of the time and stole some of her tech, reverse engineered it, and then made it for himself.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how this is framed, too, because I feel like you could very easily swing this act as not a malicious one. Like, oh, he's, you know, he's taking something from the villains. That's fine. But, like... Beast is very aware of what he's doing here is just, like, theft.
Ethically dubious, one could say. So, but he is able to reverse engineer their technology, which they use to hijack the Krakoan gates, like they did when they first appeared in X-Men number 3. And he is able to now do that to the gates. So they have now roughly solved that issue. And as he tests out this new technology, he has a young man step through the Krakoan portal that we very quickly learn through hints is the alive version of Explodey Boy.
So...
Yeah, the revived version.
Yeah, the revived version. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Went through the whole on-death process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He got, you know, onboarded to Krakoa. So, like, this kind of leads to what I think is one of the better moments of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
why did we bring Explodey Boy?
So Hickman could play with perspective and shift it from the obvious kaiju fight into something a bit more down to earth and nice.
Yeah.
That's my read on it is, you know, he went, you know, this is going to end in a fight, but I'm not going to look at the fight. I'm going to do something else.
Yeah. And again, it's fine. It's just, it's an odd addition. Like, why would...
It is.
Why is CIA Man Beast like, let me bring this child who can explode? And, like, that's fine and all, but I don't know how much good that does in this situation.
Yeah, because I don't know if anyone has made the connection that Explodey Boy is the zombie that's helping everybody. I don't think he's ever said his name, either. It's just he explodes. And unless Beast got that and just kind of cycled through something in his mind and was like, oh, I should bring him, it just looks like Beast brought a random kid here. which is very weird.
Yeah, like, you could just, you know, bring Jubilee or Gambit.
Yeah, or like, some other mutant kid, you know, not this brand new character.
Yeah, but again, it's I don't want to get too in the weeds with this. This feels like nitpicking, but...
I don't think it's nitpicking. I think it's... Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And I'm not a huge fan of what comes next, honestly. Gonna have to push back on that one.
Interesting. That's fair. Okay. Yeah, because I'm a fan of it, like Tim is. I actually kind of like it.
Yeah. So, immediately Explodey Boy lands and finds zombie version of him, and we have a chat.
Yeah, we have a nice chat between the two of them, where the alive Explodey Boy explains to his dead self that mutants have conquered death and can now come back to life. However, this is gonna end poorly for his zombie self, because the zombies are gonna have to go.
Yeah. It almost feels like Explodey Boy knows the ending of this already, which is very odd, but it does seem like it's just a general, like, y'all aren't gonna make it through this. What ends up happening is a kind of a nice little conversation where it's just like, it's yourself talking to your past self is basically what's happening here.
Mm-hmm. I gotta say, I did like the moment where the present self does say, hey, we reconnected with our parents. We helped cure Dad of his arthritis with the Krakoan medicine. And even though their relationship is still not good, they are talking, which is an improvement.
Yeah. It's a surprisingly, like, hopeful conversation. I do kind of like it. It just, it gives me the fuzzies.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about where I'm at with it. It's like, it feels nice. I almost wonder, too, if this is written for people maybe who have not caught up with the Krakoa stuff and were just jumping in for Empire. And so this was a way to be like, yeah, no, these are what the mutants are doing right now. They explain that, hey, we conquered death. Hey, things are going pretty well and are, you know, thumbs up. But even then, it doesn't feel like the explanation for this. It really just feels like Hickman decided to try something new and go for it.
Yeah, it almost feels like either this idea came later or this is the idea he wanted to make and just was going to put this in there regardless.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the fact that Explodey Boy was such like a main, or Zombie Explodey Boy was such a major part of the early issues makes me think that this was always kind of the plan, but how we got here just feels so weird.
I mean, it also doesn't help that we had three issues of just constant fighting, constant stakes, and then when everything is coming to a head, we're now sitting over here on the side and just having a chat.
Yeah, which again, I don't mind. Like, I don't, you know, whatever. We've now established this fight means nothing.
Yeah.
So, fine. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, I find this scene here of, like, alive Explodey Boy telling zombie Explodey Boy about their first kiss to be much more engaging than anything that's going on with the issue.
Which, question, what do spiders smell like? I didn't know they had a smell, or that could be a mutant power.
You know.
Like spiders.
Like spiders.
You know, maybe it's that kind of like that thing where some people can smell ants.
Yeah.
It's only like a couple people that can do it, but it seems so strange to me. But, you know, bug smells aside, Sergio, you said you didn't like this. I'm very curious about your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I just wasn't a fan of how narratively forced it is. Like you already pointed out, it kind of comes around for no reason into the issue. And then they have this conversation, which is nice, but comes across as extremely twee to me. Has nothing to do with anything else that came before. Like even though the zombie version of Explodivoy had appeared in the previous issues, he was mostly comic relief for those. He's the only one of the zombie horde that is given any sort of agency throughout the whole thing. And, you know, just spending, what, like 6 pages on this conversation is kind of, to me, the ultimate giving up of anything the whole, you know, 4-issue series could have meant. It doesn't really interact with anything else. It's not like bouncing ideas off of what happened to Wanda or what's going on with Magic or anything. It's just, you know, it's just there kind of as a, I don't know, it's kind of just not completely out of place. This could have been placed anywhere in any other issue. And, you know, it's just here because they needed something to fill this issue with.
Yeah.
I don't care about these two at all. Nothing's been done to make me care about these two characters having a twee spontaneous conversation about their first case or whatever.
Yeah, it definitely, I absolutely agree. While I do like the actual conversation itself, narratively it does feel very forced.
I wish I cared about these characters, and I wish this meant anything to me.
Yeah, I honestly, I don't even know if Explody Boy shows up after this.
Yeah, no, I don't know either. I mean, we're going to get to the end here where Zombie Explody Boy blows himself up. So, you know, nothing really carries over. This yeah, really is just kind of a one-off thing. It's just here.
Yeah.
Give me a... What was it, the girl? That one on the kind of Russian installation doing the psychedelic stuff?
Yes, in New Mutants.
Yeah, Cosmar. One. Yeah, give me Cosmar.
Where is she?
Yeah, probably still with the New Mutants.
Yeah, probably still with Maxine and Manon, which she absolutely should not be with.
Well, they were here, so where's she?
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah.
But yeah, this does nothing for me.
But yeah, Splody Boy blows up. The main kills zombie the thing beast. Is dead. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everyone's covered in goo.
Yeah.
Yep.
Magic is now fully demoned.
Mm-hmm. Now that all of the other problems are taken care of, which, by the way, now that the giant kaiju is dead, all of the plant people start dying as well. Yeah. So that problem is also fixed. And now Magic can rule unopposed with no problems whatsoever.
Yeah, she starts ordering a bunch of Omega Mutants to be her slaves, hits on Nightcrawler, and we get the punchline panel here that it's now 29 days, 23 hours, and 59 seconds before, or 59 minutes and 59 seconds before the spell was cast, so...
Yep, there is your punchline. So just as she's about to say maybe a little bit too much to Nightcrawler, the staff dissipates, her demon powers go away, and all of the zombies turn into dust.
Yeah. The horde culture leaves. Angel asks if he wants to hunt them down. Nightcrawler says, no, not today. We can't do anything significant. And we all decide to go home.
Disembodied boys offer some platitudes on Genosha.
Yeah, ruins of what could have been of Genosha, looking kind of cool, looking like that one island in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Where they filmed Skyfall, or one of the scenes of Skyfall. I You know what I'm talking about.
I do know what you're talking about. Yeah, it's a lot of city skylines on a very small piece of land.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, platitudes. We get Explodey Boy either getting the jetpack or dropping it. I can't tell.
I think he's getting it. Because zombies, Explodey Boy, it doesn't matter, but yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, Horticulture's back doing evil science. Beast still has his cool pack that he made from stolen technology. And
what is that supposed to do again?
That is supposed to hack Krakow and Gates. I'm guessing they now have a way.
How?
I don't know.
Okay.
Plant, mutant magic. Plant magic.
Technology.
I am guessing what I would assume the implications of this are is this is a way to stop Horde Culture from hacking the Krakow and Gates now.
Yeah, I don't know if this, like, I understand, I don't care about the means so much as I would like to know what it is exactly he stole or is able to do now.
Yeah, so I assume it's to, they now have the way to stop them from doing that, but I don't know exactly.
Yeah, well, they hadn't shown up in
a while.
Yeah, since, so like, issue, issues, like...
It was issue 3. That was the last time we saw them.
Yeah, the first issue where they debuted. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, we show Scarlet Witch can't get past this, and, we're done with Empire X-Men.
Yep.
She's sad.
She's sad. She's crying, reading a book, being like, oh no, I killed a bunch of mutants, and then now I've made zombie mutants.
Yeah.
Yep. But nothing happened, don't worry, everything's back.
Everything is fine. Nothing happened. You know how I said I was kind of hoping there was a little bit more here with Scarlet Witch before reading this issue and, like, maybe a little bit of resolution there? I can't believe I walked away from this with absolutely none of it.
Nope.
Like, even the mutants don't know who caused the zombies. They have nothing to connect it to Wanda unless one of them goes to talk to Doctor Strange or Wanda. And I don't think either is just going to say it.
Yeah.
This just feels... like something that's just not going to be referenced at all.
Yes. Yeah. No. 100%. Maybe a couple of times, but overall, this is just going to get, you know, buried in the wayside somewhere and no one's going to care.
Yep.
So it was fun, but it was really empty and I'm kind of bummed about that. It really just felt like the X office was told, hey, you need to be in this event, do something, and so this is what they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This
might be my least favorite thing we've read.
Wow.
And I'm not forgetting about Fallen
Angels. Yeah, I was about to say.
Ooh, okay, that's a spicy take.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know if I agree with that one, but I do think it would definitely be the second worst.
I don't know where I would put it. I would definitely say this is the least impactful to everything. Because at least Fallen Angels did have something for Psylocke. Because that's now leading into Hellions that we saw.
Yeah.
Where is this? I don't know. I can't say. I don't remember.
But, speaking of Empire.
Yeah, well.
Speaking of Empire, here is one issue that is going to blow all four of those issues out of the water. And that's because it's...
God, remember when this had something to do with Empire?
Yes, I do. And do you remember how it was going to be really cool and then it was?
I had genuinely forgotten this issue we just talked about had something to do with Empire. This was X-Men Empire. Oh, God.
Yeah, that was
the tie-in.
Yeah, that was the tie-in.
Jesus. Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, you know.
I would have to look it up, but I know Empire X-Men would be in collected editions of Empire. I don't know if X-Men numbers 10 and 11 are the one we're about to just talk about.
That's funny.
Yeah. So it might be, but I don't know if it's in every edition of it.
Let me look up an Empire.
Yeah, I'm curious if it's in it or not, because if it's not, that is a massive travesty.
Would it be like the Omnibus edition?
Yeah, I'm
guessing so. Hold on, I'm trying to...
God, there's so many in this.
I know. All right, here we go. I found the Empire. That's a paperback. This, yeah, the Omnibus.
It does include 10 and 11. I'm looking at it right now.
Goodness.
Yeah, it includes Empire X-Men 1 to 4 and X-Men 2019 10 to 11.
Thank goodness, because you can get that and then you can get into the real good stuff.
Yeah. Black Panther and the Agents of Wakanda, issue 7 through 8.
Aw. Maybe one day those will see the light.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, those I think are in that book.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I think those were actually released.
Oh, well, that's good. I'm glad they released them at some point, at the very least.
Yeah. Okay, so do we want to go into X-Men 11?
Yes, I'm so excited. Okay, so X-Men number 11, One War, One Mutant, is written by Jonathan Hickman and also released in August of 2020. We are going to open up here on Krakoa, on the Arako Point, where Rockslide, Anole, and Loa are journeying to find this strange being who is sitting in the forest. And it has been a while, but we are seeing the Summoner again. He was first introduced in X-Men number 2. He is that pure white fella with the weird black symbol on his chest who can summon demons. He is here and he wants to play a game.
Is this our first time seeing the Rockslide crew here?
I believe so. I want to say Anole was in the background of something, but that was it.
Yeah. I looked them up a little bit. I know nothing about these characters for the most part. I've seen Rockslide in a couple of things. He has a very striking design, obviously. But yeah, they are from the second volume of New Mutants.
That makes sense. I've seen Anole and other New Mutants stuff, but Rockslide and Loa were new to me.
But Summoner wants to play a game.
Yep. Unfortunately, it looks like it doesn't really have a proper translation from Araki, but the closest thing is a trial or a test, where it is a game where the players find out about the weakness within themselves and each other.
Yeah, it's a game about weakness, you know, how to defend, how to attack it. Rockslide says he doesn't have a weakness, and Summoner's like, that's how it starts.
Mm-hmm. I really like that beginning to it because it's very ominous.
Well, no, what's ominous is his line immediately afterward where he says, would you like to play, friend? It's okay to refuse. Many do. It's like, don't play this game.
I simply wouldn't play a game.
Yeah.
Like, walking through a dark forest, I encounter this naked dude cross-legged in front of a stump.
Yeah.
Asking me to play a game.
Yeah, like, no. This is not the vibe, Rockslide.
No, not at all. Especially when he could see you when you were trying to be quiet.
Yeah, I mean, he is a man of rocks, but still.
Not good vibes. But I appreciate Rockslide taking the initiative, because he picks up the piece on the tree stump, and it automatically forms into a very small version of Rockslide.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, as with life, where you begin has little to do with where you will end.
This guy's such a weirdo.
He has
full
black eyes.
Yeah, like very black lips, you know, and you can, like, it's just, he's really unsettling.
Every alarm should be going off right now in your head.
Yeah, do not play this game. Also, as soon as we get the warning that once this game starts, we do not stop until it ends. It looks like we are getting a alien invasion.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's the Kotati.
Yep. So our fun game is going to have to wait, unfortunately, because Empire is currently taking place. So we see some ships. Not good. But thankfully, it looks like the captains of Krakoa have gotten together and discussed different battle plans, because we have a data page
also,
here that explains a couple.
We say the game has to wait, and that means... I don't know if we go back to it for the rest of this issue. Presumably, they do not stop playing.
You know, I also would presume they don't, because if you start, you can't stop. So an alien invasion is not going to stop them.
Yeah.
Did you know they're trying to create an atmosphere that is serene and non-militaristic?
Yeah.
Over at Krakoa.
These data pages are something.
Yeah, you know, like the non-militaristic idea of training the entire populace in hand-to-hand combat.
If I had to characterize Every story that we've read in this podcast, serene and non-militaristic would be like the first two things that popped in my head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is wild. The mutant training section is just like, the tone of it is like all over the place.
They are not suggesting that everyone be required to become proficient at hand-to-hand combat, but they are not suggesting that everyone be required to become proficient at hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah, we could do better on that front. We should go do more training, everybody. Yep. And then we approve a war college for Bishop.
Yep. You know, I mean, you tasked a bunch of people who have fought for most of their lives in the defense of the nation. The first thing they're going to do is go back to their old ways of, well, we're going to have to obviously fight.
Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't help that everybody else around them agrees with them and says, oh, yeah, we should definitely do that.
Yeah, it's the type of thing that you should read this document if you are presented to this as like a leader and maybe look at it and be like, maybe stuff's a little backwards. But the impression here is they just kind of rubber stamped it.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah, sounds good.
Look, I swear, just a little more violence. Just one tiny little bit more violence and Krakow is going to be safe. Just a little bit more.
Little bit.
Dude, just a little bit. Just a little bit more and we're going to be safe. We're going to be so safe.
It's so safe, no one will have to fight ever again.
Yeah,
I swear, can we have another, like, Black Ops team, please?
Yeah,
just one more Black Ops team.
What about the mutant FBI?
Like, you know, this one can be even more off the grid than X-Force. Yeah. We just need something more.
Yeah,
Oh, man.
Just increasingly more fucked up team-ups.
Yeah.
God.
Mm-hmm.
Again, also, this is bonkers. I love this data page.
It's
good stuff.
It's also not presented in the way we're talking about it, where you read it and you're like, oh wow, that's really messed up. It's presented in a way to explain what is about to happen because of the invasion. And it's supposed to be like, oh yeah, obviously they are prepared for this. Even somebody on the council like Magneto, you know, was experimenting with enhanced combat techniques for all of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But
I guess a big takeaway here is they're experimenting with combos. Someone played Chrono Trigger and wants to do like the dual and triple techs
with
multiple X-Men.
Mm-hmm. Mutant circuits.
Yeah. They were like, man, that's pretty cool. Let's do that.
Yep.
And we kind of talk about this arpeggio access thing for people to go hide in. That's also kind of set up here. But yeah, I don't know. My takeaway from this is, what do you mean serene and non-militaristic?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff not quite in between the lines because it is on the line, but nobody else seems to notice.
Yeah.
But once we got all of that explained, we go actually to Krakoa on the next day. And we find our favorite storyteller, Exodus, at it again as he is telling the story to all of the children around him about the hero of the day and what exactly happened while they were all safe in shelter.
Yeah.
I gotta say, again, props to him. He's a fantastic storyteller. Maybe don't indoctrinate the children like this.
No. We gotta go further into indoctrinate the children. We do not fear death. We fear man and those like him.
Yeah, that's not weird at all. Especially when it's just a bunch of kids saying it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But, okay. So, yeah, Exodus is basically saying, hey, we survived yesterday. Everything worked out. Why are you not afraid? You know, because resurrection exists. And he's like, that is correct, you know, but you should also recognize that heroes were in play over what happened yesterday. And he explains what a hero is. It's, you know, somebody who, you know, puts their life on the line for others. And there was one big standout during the conflict, and his name was Magneto.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Do you think the helmet, you think he's, like, cleaned out this helmet since Wolverine pissed in it? I know we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here, but...
Yes. I wouldn't be surprised if he, like, you know, melted the helmet and then just remade it.
Yeah,
it's possible. Yeah, I was about to say he can probably just, like, separate everything that's not metal out of the helmet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
they also mention, just kind of a brief note, they apparently these children were evacuated to the arpeggios that they kind of mentioned, their little escape plan. And apparently people do die in this attack, which I guess makes sense. They get just hard invaded here, but yeah, there were casualties.
Yeah, you know, it makes sense considering what Vulcan did on the moon, and he just blew up one of their bases. So sending three massive warships filled with dozens and dozens of Kotati warriors, reasonable. You know, yeah. I can't say that's a bad move. But yeah, unfortunately, there are mutants who die here, but not as many as there could have been, because Magneto, broken from his serene floating in his home by magic, is told that the Kotati have invaded from the moon, and that while magic goes to deal with whatever is probably happening on the moon, because she's not sure, if Magneto would take care of the problem here. And he very, very gladly accepts the call.
Yeah, I think it's interesting also that Magneto assumes these are just humans attacking.
Yes.
Like, I guess it makes sense, but yeah, like, when they clarify, like, yeah, these are aliens, he's like, oh.
I'm going to assume humans are higher up in his list than alien plant people.
Yeah,
to be fair.
Yeah, that's probably true. That is probably more to be expected. He also just kind of talks about a little bit how they, this is like their third time being attacked recently. It has happened a lot.
Mm-hmm. This nice land of peace is under fire a lot. Yeah. And from a lot of different sources.
Yeah, but we put on classic red and like purple Magneto clothes here, and mm-hmm. we are out to fight.
And I gotta say, the art in this issue, fantastic. It is so good at making Magneto look regal, but also very brutal and calculating at the same time. Because right after he puts on his suit, you just get this image of him floating up through Kotati warriors being sliced in half by a bunch of metal shards, and it looks like it doesn't even faze him.
He looks like he's calmly walking upwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It makes him look very majestic.
Yeah. He's not even trying.
Yeah. This is nothing to him. This is a walk.
Yeah. This. I will be. What is about to happen here is this issue is Magneto flexing. Like that is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is what we are about to witness.
Yeah, this is the Magneto flex issue, and everybody around him goes, yes, you are incredible. We agree with you. So as Magneto joins the fray and saves one of the cuckoos, we do get this bit of talk here from Exodus as he explains what a hero is, like I mentioned earlier. A hero fights for those who can't.
So... I just to slightly touch upon just a little bit of dialogue here that I think is kind of funny. Mindy and Sophie trade names with each other. I can't tell which one is trading names, but I can't tell if the implication is Magneto isn't able to tell them apart or just immediately knows which one is which.
You know, I'm going to go with a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. Like, maybe he knows which one this is, but is just going to play along with the joke because they like to do that.
See, how I read it was Magneto immediately knows who he's talking to. Like there's very little guesswork involved here.
Yeah, I can see that, too. So, with one of the telepaths saved, Magneto contacts Sage and gets a bit of an assessment as to what is going on, since Sage also... maybe not so legally took over a bunch of satellites and military satellites that they were not supposed to know about, and is now getting good aerial views of the attacking aliens. So she is able to upload all of this to Magneto so he can know exactly what is going on around the island. We see that Black Tom is holding with the island-wide defenses. Iceman is helping Storm. and, you know, other mutants are in the fray.
Takotari are just getting dunked on here.
Yeah, like, it's... They should not have picked a fight here.
Yes. You know, it's what Explodey Boy said when they landed on Genosha. You landed on the worst place you could have on the planet. It's an island filled with people with superpowers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand that the main forces were over in Wakanda, but they could have really used some mutants over there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have solved Empire really quick.
Like, there's probably a sizable difference in, like, the number of, you know, just bodies they were able to throw at this versus Wakanda. But yeah, it could have helped.
Yeah, because, yeah, this feels like they were set up for failure. Like, the Kotati had no chance here.
No.
Yeah.
But yeah, Magneto tells Magma to blow a volcano because he wants some iron.
Mm-hmm. In a really, really fun exchange, too. It looks like Magma was going to do that anyway, but Magneto would rather have it directed, because this is part of the plan that the captains put together and some of the experimentation that had been going on.
Yeah. Oh, also, just, you know, for the note of it, we've mentioned some satellites that are overhead. I'm sure that won't come into play.
No, not at all.
Uh-huh.
So once the volcano blows on Krakoa, Iceman is contacted, and he very, very quickly freezes the magma there. And because of its flash frozen, it is very brittle and sharp. And which, you know, what would somebody who can control magnetism do with brittle and sharp objects?
Yeah, Magneto was flying around with, like, a bunch of, essentially blades.
It's so cool. It's so cool. It's a very simple combination of powers of, like, okay, yeah, obviously, get iron, you know, freeze it. Okay, now he can use it. But it's such an effective use of all three of their powers.
Yeah.
It is very cool. Yeah, this is the Chrono Trigger triple tech. This is the cutscene, you know, the finishing move that gets unlocked once you've lowered the boss's life bar enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
Looks great.
Yeah, things aren't going well for Toad. Of all characters, as he's being choked out by the Kotati general, it seems like.
Yep. We saw him last issue. He's the really cool one with the pet plant dogs.
Seems very happy about killing Toad, and then his dog dies.
Very brutally, just getting impaled by a bunch of iron spikes.
Yeah. We have a dramatic off here as he says, "Who dares?" And Magneto just flies in and says, "I dare."
Yeah, it's a wonderful school of drama battle here. You know, we know how dramatic Magneto can be, but when he comes up against somebody who is equally as dramatic, beautiful. Magic is made.
Yeah. Just this entire quote here from Magneto is great. "I dare. Honestly, it's a failing that's plagued me my entire life. You are clearly in command here, so I'm offering you a gift. Order your men to leave and never return. Do this and you can save them and save yourself. Friend."
It's so good. It's awesome. And he's like very menacingly floating down to the ground. There's a bunch of dead Kotati around him. You can't see his face. Like, it's fantastic.
Yeah, The General Kotati does not really take his word for it, and we get a series of panels that zoom in on his face as he talks himself up. He is the forest, he is the world, he does not lose, all it takes is one seed and a little time. Yeah, you're our food.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this guy has a big game. talks a very good game, ends it with, "So if it's a fight you're looking for, then fight me." Sergio, do you want to describe these next couple of pages?
You mean the ones after the Kotati general finishes speaking?
Yeah.
I love this.
It's my favorite.
I love the lack of dialogue in these, because you don't really know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then you like connect dots and just see the satellites fall one after the other on top of this guy. who proceeds to brush them aside, and then only for more satellites to fall on top of him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, just a bigger satellite.
Yes, this is just beautifully illustrated. Like, the, you know, both on profile, each of them on one side of the page. And he just glances up, and the, you know, the impacts of the satellites against the ground are so well illustrated.
I love them just getting progressively bigger.
Yes, I love, like, the effects.
Yes.
Are fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you can tell each subsequent one is heavier and more powerful. You know?
Yes.
The first one, yeah, it's a bit of an explosion and, you know, some dust from it. And then the next one is bigger. And then the next one. And then you have Magneto the entire time on the opposite side, just floating there.
Yeah.
He's just
the dust clouds are so good.
Yeah, the dust clouds are fantastic.
I love the it's the second panel on the second page of this where he just forms up a force field to block off the dust that these satellites are like sending his way. But yeah, just has a casual conversation. Like he truly just ruined this man's life. Or, well, I guess killed this man, and just was not bothered by it.
No.
Yep. Like he didn't move. He had already won.
Yeah. Like this is over. This is not a fight. But yeah, Apollo says, brings over Mindy and says, "Hey, apologize to Sage for stealing the satellites, and we'll make a payment for the weather ones." And we have a brief line here about how one of them was a spy satellite they weren't supposed to know about. They're like, yeah, just if they ask, tell them we don't know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. It's gone. Who knows what happened to it?
Yeah.
Great.
I do also have to say, while this is going on, Magneto is also dropping other satellites into the Kotati ships and breaking them. So when he says he won, he means that in several different ways, because now the invasion is over.
Yeah, like you're done. This is you should have turned around and went home.
Mm-hmm.
Go join your friends in Wakanda.
Yeah. I love this. I love this so much. You know, we've gotten a lot of Magneto flexing from Hickman throughout this entire, you know, Krakoan era. But this is like the pinnacle of it. This is what it was building to, is this couple of pages here where he is just masterfully beating everyone around him, and it's like it's nothing. Yeah. This is so beneath him to have to deal with, but he's enjoying it all the same.
Yeah, and our last shot here is Exus finishing the story, and we see Magneto showing up on the moon to help the other X-Men fight off the invasion there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I have to say, you know, I know Magneto's history has changed a lot, and him and Xavier being on opposite sides and enemies is actually kind of an older X-Men thing. I really like the turnaround here of Magneto being a mutant hero. You know, these kids are propping him up. Exodus is spreading the story, so Magneto is seen that way. But it's really nice. Because at the end of the day, that is what Magneto always wanted, is he wanted mutants to be safe, and he wanted a safe place for them. And now that he got it without having to commit all of the murder that he really wanted to do, it's nice to see him get that recognition that he really wanted.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, fantastic issue. Easily my favorite one, you know, that we're reading this week. But probably my favorite one in a bit of a while, too. Not to say that they haven't been bad, but I really like this one. it's the sequence of him pulling those satellites down on the Kotati's head. It's fantastic.
Yeah, good bit.
So do you want to get into Wolverine?
Yeah, so we're going to move on to Wolverine number 4. It has been a little bit since we talked about Wolverine. So just as a refresher, the last time we saw him, he had let the Pale Girl live in order to save Jess Bannister as they struck the Russian pollen lab in the ocean. Jeff and his daughter were alive and fine, and Wolverine left them to their own devices, and that was the last time we saw anything from this series.
Yes.
So now with Wolverine number 4, The Red Tavern, this one is written by Benjamin Percy and also released in August of 2020. And we are opening up here on the Quiet Council of Krakoa, where Wolverine has to return Magneto's helmet that he stole and kind of grates against the leadership here.
Yeah, Magneto begins to threaten him. Wolverine is like, yeah, man, you almost pulled out my skeleton once. Well, let's call it even. But yeah, the Quiet Council is not happy about this.
Yeah, even though he did do something good, he figured out what was going on with the Marauders. He figured out what was going on with the pollen. He did it by circumventing this leadership that they had put in place and that, you know, everybody had roughly agreed would be the way things would work. And here's Wolverine just being like, nah, that's not it.
Yeah, they're mad that they're undermined. Or they were undermined here, is like what the kind of crux of this conversation is. But yeah, Magneto calls him a barbarian.
Which this is where we get the gag of Wolverine giving the helmet back, and we find out that he says that he peed in it.
Yeah. Used his helmet as a piss bucket. Magneto looks disgusted. A very interesting portrayal of Magneto
from what we just
X-Men.
Saw.
Yeah.
Yeah, from this very, you know, gallant hero to being like, ugh, gross.
Yeah, and again, Xavier does kind of just straight up say, like, you're publicly mocking our government, and when you insult and embarrass Magneto, you endanger what we've worked so hard to build. And it's like, again, like, that's what it's about. Wolverine kind of went under the red tape to get this done, and they are mad that it go through the proper channels.
Yeah, even if they're happy with what he did.
Yeah.
So with
I like Apocalypse just kind of staring into the distance.
Same. Yeah.
He is so like not amused.
Not knowing what he's doing there.
It's just like what Mystique just looks bored during all this. Like,
I mean, to be fair, I'm kind of with them on this. Wolverine is kind of being a bratty little kid.
I mean, he got the result done.
He did, you know, and at the end of the day, yeah, he did figure it out. He didn't quote-unquote fix it, because the Pale Girl did actually get away. But for now, things are fine.
Yeah.
So, but he is being kind of a brat.
Yeah.
But we do have a data page next, and this is about the Hidden Gate. This is, again, ended with that same Russian moniker that we have been getting in Wolverine a little bit. And this one is about a hidden gate that leads to a land of shadows and solitude. It seems that Wolverine does not like how Krakoa has no dark side and no underside to it, because he believes that with all light must come darkness, and therefore that is a balance. And without that balance, he's kind of unnerved by it. So instead, this is his home away from home, so to speak.
Yeah, just some place up in the middle of nowhere, Canada.
Yep. And you can very much tell that because it is just a little bar surrounded by snow and nothing.
Yep.
I do have to say, you know, for the atmosphere of the bar here that Wolverine is going to, even before you walk in the door, you absolutely get the vibe that Percy is going for here.
Yeah.
You know, it is just a rundown, awful place, middle of nowhere. The clientele are looking to punish themselves with drink. The floors are dirty with sawdust to soak up the blood and the vomit. There's bullet holes in the wall. The whiskey and the beer is terrible. This isn't a fun place, but this is where people go. And yeah. You absolutely get that.
There's a snowmobile outside. I think that's a neat touch. It's kind of weird. I feel like I don't always associate bullet holes with bars in the middle of nowhere. But
same? Especially Canada, but maybe there's like a, you know, outskirts of Canada where it's more like that. Like, if this was in Texas in the middle of nowhere, I could see that more.
I don't know. I feel like even there, it's hard to do crime when people just know you or get in, like, fights. But I guess it makes it easier if you could just sweep it under the rug.
Yeah, because this place feels like, you know, once you walk in, the law isn't going to really hold here.
Yeah. We got like three people in this bar.
Yeah, there's not a lot of people here.
Yeah. So it's we got the bartender, obviously, a big ol' fellow of a red beard, some military looking guy playing pool, a old lady and some dude who looks like he belongs in Ravencroft, just smiling, sitting at the table.
Yeah, very, very unnerving. But those are going to be our characters for this issue. So when Wolverine walks in, he asks for whatever's on tap and goes ahead and puts on a song that our soldier friend here does not like at all. Wolverine kind of snaps back at him and then gets a pool cue across the back of the head, just out of nowhere.
Yeah, looks like they're about to fight Red Tavern Man, or Bartender Man, pumps a shotgun. Wolverine headbutts this guy anyway.
Yep. So the soldier heads off into the bathroom, and Wolverine does ask about the guy, but Bartender doesn't know anything, which Wolverine finds a little weird because he says he smells familiar. But before he can really go much into that thought, our peace officer friend Jack arrives, in kind of a rush, too, because he says he was driving along the road and he saw some horrific creature eating a moose in the middle of the road. He swerved off to the side to see what it was, but the beast had vanished. And with his car stuck in the drift, he decided to hightail it here to the bar. And he was lucky he made it, as he says he feels like the beast was watching him the entire time.
Yeah, and then something very strange happens of, like, the bartender man hears this and immediately starts getting real pushy with being like, yeah, man, I could take you out there and we could fix it, get you sent on your way.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's no trouble, nothing like that. But the peace officer mentions, just like the bartender did, that there is a storm going on outside, and it's a pretty nasty one. This is actually a pretty significant change, because when the bartender greeted Wolverine into the bar, he's like, well, if you're going to be here, you're going to be here for a while, because the storm is going to keep you here. So, dramatic flip from earlier.
Yeah, like he's... Every line of dialogue the bartender has toward Peterson is trying to get him away. This guy really wants to stay in the bar. And he responds with, yeah, okay, I'll get you a beer, then I'll help you get on your way.
Mm-hmm.
Just, yeah, he wants this guy out the door.
Yeah. Yeah. And while this is going on, the strange older woman makes some comments to Wolverine. And seems like she, you know, either is hitting on him or knows him a little bit. And Wolverine is questioning her and asking if he's ever met her before, because he's got a bit of holes in his memory, so maybe they did meet and he just doesn't remember. But before he can really figure that all out, he starts to feel really woozy and off his guard. I really like how the panels here reflect that, because they become wavy themselves. Nothing is very aligned and straight-lined. Everything is now curvy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the drunk effect from Grand Theft Auto.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
But in art form.
And then we kind of...
Dutch pussy get dizzy.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah, exactly.
Then we get a data page, and if you didn't guess what was going on now...
Well, you sure are now. Because this data page is explaining a mutant trauma support group where you are safe, valued, and important here. All of the people who meet here have had trauma from mutants, whether that be from a mutant attack, mutants killing loved ones. Doesn't matter. Everybody's welcome. However, there are a couple of rules.
You have to be approved by the host. So
not
everybody's welcome, actually. Only invitation. So,
right. Sorry, this is invite only. I'm sure it's like Facebook. If you want to join a group, you just have to be like, okay, you have to be approved and you're good.
Yeah. We got some very nice rules, you know, no hate speech, degrading comments, respect everyone's privacy, no promoting or spam, standard stuff here.
Yeah, you know, except I do have to say all of these rules do not apply to mutants.
Yeah.
In fact, if you are doxing mutants or talking bad about them or trying to figure out where they are, then yes, absolutely you can do that and do it proudly, actually.
Yeah, they want you to dox mutants. Yeah, like hate speech, that's fine if it's towards mutants. Fundraisers for you trying to get medical funds or, you know, travel equipment to go hunt down some mutants, that's fine. Also, they have a code here, so if someone gets into the group, they really don't have too much proof what they're saying.
Yeah, so, you know, if you haven't gotten it yet, that's absolutely where we're going with this. I don't know, it's a fine, interesting flip on the normal idea of a support group, but this one is just out for blood and revenge, and of course it's about mutants. It's not exactly a new idea, but I do like how it is going to be playing out here in this issue. So we're going to see the stakes immediately raise after this, because as Wolverine comes to in the bathroom, he realizes either the whiskey was way stronger than he thought, or he's been drugged. And he's not sure which, because as he comes to, he realizes he has blood on him. Because the soldier that came in here earlier has now been gored through the chest and is very, very dead.
Yeah. Wolverine has a moment where he's like, did I do this? And
yeah, he's not sure if this is him or not. Which, you know, goes back to him having his holes in his memory and everything. He does go up to the soldier here and kind of looks him over and notices a tattoo on his neck. And he now remembers why the guy was so familiar. It looks like years ago in Oregon, he fought the Brotherhood Militia. And I did look this up. This is from Wolverine number 1 by Greg Rucka. These are the Brothers of the New World. They were a group of men that kidnapped women and lived in a compound in the desert. However, it ended by Wolverine killing every single one of them. So it looks like a few of them did actually get away. And this guy is one of them.
Yeah, well, still batting 100 on those deaths so far.
or is he? We're not sure who killed this man just yet. Unfortunately, the peace officer comes in at the wrong time and shoots Wolverine, but not with a shotgun shell, but with the trank dart he had in his shotgun ready for whatever animal was eating the moose in the middle of the road.
Yeah, The man with the grin puts a glass jar over a fly in case you're just a little bit confused on what.
Yeah. I do also have to say Wolverine's batting average with bars is now 0-for-2. Between the vampires and this, I don't think Wolverine should just go to bars anymore because he's not doing too good. He always gets hurt or in trouble or captured when he goes to one.
Yeah.
But Wolverine comes to chained to a chair, and it's very clear everybody here knows he's Wolverine. It was kind of hinted at earlier that Logan is trying to get to this place undercover where he's a nobody, but it's kind of hard to ignore who that is since his face has been on TV and posters and everywhere for years. Not to mention everybody here, besides the peace officer, has a bit of revenge that they want to take against Wolverine.
You would think everyone in the Canadian wilderness would recognize him now.
Yeah, but I don't know. Comics are silly. One of Wolverine's major disguises is him putting on an eye patch.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever heard of patch?
No. Oh, that's new to me.
Oh, wow. I'm shocked. This is a very popular like alter ego for him. Yeah, look up. Let me see if we can find a picture.
Because I'm pretty sure I've seen a picture of him with an eye patch on. Doesn't he normally wear like a cowboy hat?
No. Just like a white suit normally.
Oh wow. Yeah. No, I have never seen that.
Yeah. Hold on.
I mean, weird, awful disguises are not new. Because I mean, Clark Kent and Superman. It's just glasses. So that doesn't surprise me too much, but that's very silly that it's just an eye patch for Wolverine.
I'm gonna dump this in the chat, but yeah, he was there was a bit in, I think like the first volume of Wolverine where this was his.
Well, that's very funny.
Yeah, this was his alter ego. He would just go to Madripoor with this disguise on, and everybody there knew him as Patch and didn't recognize him as Wolverine.
That's funny.
Like,
did
no, that's,
he use
that's
his
just
claws?
Patch.
You would think the claws would give it away.
I don't think he made a habit of using them frequently.
Okay.
I think he kept them under wraps, but it's still like, that's Wolverine with an eye patch.
Yeah,
I just think it's very funny that he would pose for this picture. Yeah. Like, imagining him like setting up this whole shoot.
Yeah.
It doesn't help that his hair looks like his mask. You know, this is not going to help you with your disguise. I'll post a picture of this cover on our social media because it is really funny, actually.
Yeah. Going for that, like, Heihachi look?
Yes. I do have to say, the suit, nice touch. But it's not going to fool anybody.
I guess the Canadian wilderness does not recognize Wolverine. But, the bartender kind of mentions that it wasn't the entirety of the small town attempting to kill Wolverine here. It seems like what was happening was the bartender recognized that he was coming in and was like, oh, that's Wolverine.
Yep, and he let other people know that have issues with him that they should probably come here and take care of him. And because they recognize that this is Wolverine and you can cut him, shoot him, pour poison down his throat, he's still going to come back. So why not instead just put him in a prison? Just put him under the ice in the frozen lake and leave him there. He would still be alive, but he sure wouldn't be able to get out.
Yeah. So poor Peterson, our police officer here, is he's just stuck in this now.
Mm-hmm. They're still trying to get him out and telling him to just walk away. But, you know, he still seems a little uncertain here.
The vibe Peterson kind of has is a pushover.
We do get a little bit more information on the others here. And there are similar deep pulls, like the guy who is part of the Brothers of the New World. Our quote-unquote crazy person, because they do eat the fly that they caught, is from the Dunwich Sanatorium, which was from Wolverine Weapon X number 6. Apparently, at the Dunwich Sanatorium, there was a Dr. Rot there that took over the place and turned it on its head, so patients were doctors and doctors were patients. And this individual here was one of the patients at the Dunwich Sanatorium that Wolverine got captured in just for a little bit. And like the last time, it ended with Wolverine killing most of the people there.
Yeah.
So the rest of the folks walk outside to explain their plan to the peace officer and try to get him to walk away. And we see on the roof of this place is Omega Red. And he is here also hunting Wolverine.
Also, Peterson's mentioning this feels wrong. We shouldn't be doing this, but they're just, this guy is so much of a pushover. They just easily talk him into doing a murder.
Yeah, it's, you know, I did feel bad for him for a while leading up to this, but the fact that they are able to convince him to just walk away and let them kill Wolverine definitely took him on off the list of, like, I feel bad for you. Sure, he's a pushover, but still, just letting all of them murder Wolverine is kind of messed up.
Yeah. So as he's being dragged out, he asked about the others. The bartender, I think, is kind of the more interesting one here. Apparently, back in Madripoor, a brawl broke out with Wolverine at the center of it, and a thrown chair hit his fiance, cracked her skull, blood clot killed her. Came here to escape the memory and was just very shocked when Wolverine.
Yeah. I gotta say, out of all of them with their quote-unquote grievances, his is the more, I don't want to say realistic, more grounded, I suppose. Because
it's
the
one that doesn't feel like he's just a part of a group that Wolverine happened to kill that were doing some evil stuff.
Yeah. Like the soldier, he was part of a group that kidnapped women. Not gonna feel bad. The poor guy who was in the sanatorium, I do feel bad for, because he was just there. But this guy, it's like, no, we were living our lives, just doing our own thing, and we happened to unfortunately be in a place where you got into a fight.
Yeah. And, like, it's interesting because Wolverine doesn't even, like, portray this as, like, a, well, stuff happens kind of deal. Like, he is like, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. It doesn't even apologize either, actually.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I think it plays into what Percy is trying to do with this Wolverine set of issues kind of in an interesting way, because Wolverine is always, I need to work alone, I always hurt people that I'm with, people I'm with get hurt, so on and so forth, I have to be dark and brooding on my own. And all of these people are basically here to reaffirm that, just in the worst way possible.
Yeah, like he's not shocked this guy's, like, fiancé got hurt in a fight that he was involved in. Yeah. Like, that's not, nothing this man has said is, like, shocked Wolverine or, like, shaken him at all. He's just, like, it's almost an acceptance from Wolverine when he hears this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just confirming what he was guessing about himself.
Yeah. The older woman mentions that she's Gorgon's mom. I don't even know if this is true.
I also don't know if it's true. It's also kind of a wild thing to just throw in there. To explain a little bit, Gorgon and Wolverine have never liked each other. We did see Gorgon early on in X-Men. He was one of the bodyguards to the World Economics Conference, I believe. He was the one there with Cyclops.
Yeah, he's one of the war captains.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Gorgon has historically been a big villain. He joined the Hand, which is a group of assassins, rose in its ranks, and also worked with Hydra for a considerable period of time.
Worked is putting it nicely. I think he was like straight up a Hydra head.
Yeah, at one point he did get really high up there. So, you know, Nazi assassin, not a good guy. At one point he helped brainwash Wolverine to turn him into a sleeper agent killer. So yeah, the two don't like each other. As to why this woman in particular takes, you know, offense to that, considering it doesn't seem like she likes her son, Gorgon. I don't know. She's just there.
Yeah, it's why I almost, like, am not sure if she's even telling the truth here. Like, it's, that's so, like, out there and such a wild thing to just throw out. But yeah, that's what she is. Meanwhile, we are cutting a hole in the ice.
Mm-hmm. And Wolverine is just accepting it. He says, yeah, you know, I deserve every kind of pain. I've done wrong. Mutants have done wrong. But for what it's worth, we are trying to do better. But if you feel like you need to punish me, then go for it.
Yeah. And then the bartender man sees this and kind of just, like, turns around and is like, that's a really weird thing to say after you killed our friend back there.
Yeah. And Wolverine's like, no, I didn't kill him. And then he's like, wait a minute. And like a dog, he kind of sniffs the air for a bit. And he starts to definitely panic a little bit. And he's telling them to release him, get him out of there. He needs to be free so he can save their lives. Because he does smell Omega Red coming.
Yeah. So the police officer's head gets thrown into the snow beside them as Omega Red is here. And yeah.
Brutally murders every single person here.
Yeah.
Yeah, so bartender, gone. Gorgon's mom, gone. Everybody's dead.
Yep. Replaced with an army of vampires?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, he wraps the tentacles around Wolverine as he's, like, floating in there, and we see it looks like Dracula and friends are just hanging out.
Uh-huh. Yep, Dracula and company are here, all looking like really cool, you know, half-bat, half-man hybrids.
Yeah, Omega
Red. I do really like how this last page looks.
It's very cool looking, just because it's, like, from, like, the scenes that we've had of, like, where they are, it's just been, like, emptiness and nothing, and now, like, all that background is just filled with just, like, vampires, and it's a shot where it's one of those shots where you also get under the water, because there's just, like, this barrier of ice with Wolverine just floating, dangling from Omega Red's, like, tentacle things.
Yep. Yeah, I really like the art in this whole issue. I think the muted colors look great.
Mm-hmm.
The previous issue we read, the Magneto one, was pretty good, but this one I think is my favorite in terms of how just how it is colored and the art. Really fantastic stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I came away kind of high on this issue, actually. I like this quite a bit.
It is probably my favorite of the three, actually.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I really like this one, especially, you know, reading it a couple times and breaking it down. You notice a lot of the little things that Percy put into it to tell you that, hey, something was wrong. You know, I didn't realize until we were talking about it that the bartender does act differently between the peace officer and Wolverine about the storm. You know, that's one thing I just didn't catch. But there's all of this, just, you know, these little hints and bits here about the story and what's going on. And I really like how it plays out. Sure, maybe, you know, you could argue it's not the most creative, I guess, because Wolverine has been jumped in a bar before, you know, in this very series. But it works well in such a way to reinforce all of these ideas that Wolverine has about himself without directly being on the nose as much as it could be.
Yeah, like
it is very uneventful.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it works. I do like to see Wolverine get caught up in his own hubris.
Yeah, and like even with him like accepting what is happening to him and like just willingly being like, okay, that's fine. If this is what it's going to take for you guys to be at peace, like I'll do that. And even then it's like, no, you do not get that kind of agency.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even with him just letting these people kill them, like being around them still, like being around Wolverine still got them hurt, which I think is very interesting. I'm interested to see where this goes, but yeah, this was not an issue that was very nice to Logan.
No,
I don't think any of the Wolverine issues have been very nice to Logan.
No, not at all. You know, I would argue, maybe the last one did end well for him. You know, nobody died. Jeff Bannister, his best friend, is fine. But yeah, no, self-confidence wise, still bad. Still not a good time for him.
Yeah.
So. But yeah.
Good issue.
And that is the end of our set here.
Yeah, no, a fun set of issues. Was excited to, you know, get to one of my favorites of X-Men. Surprised on how I felt about Wolverine by the end of it, but it was a good one. Empire, you know it's done. That's for sure.
Yeah, we did indeed reach the conclusion.
It certainly is a comic of all time. So, do you want to tell the folks what we are reading next time?
Oh, also, I think we did forget to mention this. The X-Men issue that we read does have it's a Path to X of Swords thing on the cover. So yeah, get closer to that, I'm assuming.
Oh, I totally missed that, yeah.
Yeah, the Wolverine issue did not, but yeah, we're getting there. But yeah, next time we are going back to X-Factor with issue number 2 of that, and we're covering issues 11 and 12 of Marauders.
Woo, been a while for them too. I'm excited to get back to our pirate friends.
Yeah.
All so, right. Yeah. Well, thank you all for joining us. If you have made it this far, thank you so much for listening. If you would leave us a review on your podcasting app of choice, that would be great. It helps us get out there and find more folks to listen to the podcast with us and perhaps read along. If you would like to find this podcast on social media, you can find it on Twitter, also known as X, Tumblr, and Blue Sky. It is Study of X on all three of those platforms. And if you have any questions, comments, your favorite Magneto moments, maybe somebody else they should have added to the Wolverine bar scene that you can just pull from a random comic, you can send that to us at studyofx@gmail.com, and we might read it here on the podcast.
Yeah.
And if you are looking for me, you can find me at Sawneeks, that is S-A-W-N-E-E-K-S, on Blue Sky. Not very active there, unfortunately, but I'm still there. I post every now and again, you know, just little things here and there, mostly reposts. And Sergio, are you still in the void?
I am. Yeah, you can find me on my other podcast, though. Stray Reads, which is a monthly book club podcast. We are recording our next episode very soon. I think it's going to be next week. On Spinning Silver, which is a fantastic fantasy book, which I really, truly loved. And it's probably just an all-timer for me now.
Alright, yeah. I'll have to check in on that.
Look forward to that. Absolutely. Yeah, I think you would enjoy it.
Alright.
Yeah,
highly recommend that podcast as well. And Tim, if they are looking for you to tell you how to actually unring a bell, where can they find you to impart this eldritch knowledge?
Dangling under some ice in the Canadian wilderness, please help. It's very cold.
I don't know if we can, you know, promote that a little bit. We have heard there are vampires in the area, and we don't want any of our listeners to get hurt.
No, do come. I'm dying here. Okay.
Sorry. I think Tim's breaking up. We'll get back to him next time. It'll be okay. But until then, everyone, later, mutants.
Bye.
Bye.